Hey, it's Joey and Rick from The Edge Show, and welcome to a special edition. Special server edition, actually.
Yes.
So, it's March 2nd.
Yes.
And there's been a lot of buzz for the last couple of days.
Can you tell my hands are like shaking and with excitement and anticipation of being able to talk about this sort of stuff?
So, we've got special guest Rick Claus in here.
I'm the guest this time.
You are the guest because
perfect.
We're here to talk about Windows Server 8 Beta.
Okay.
Which is, of course, readily available and downloadable today.
Right. Go to technet.microsoft.com/evalcenter or go to the Windows Server product page to be able to get the download links. To download it yourself, go get it, go get it, go get it. It's what you need to do.
I think you want some people to go get it, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, absolutely. Get those evals.
So let's talk about this a little bit because there's been a couple of blog posts, some things going out there, and some key points that I wanted to kind of drag you in to talk about since you are now the server guy.
Okay.
And it's not my problem anymore.
Bill Lang did his first post on March 1st. He's the corporate vice president for server and outlined a whole whack of different things. And so we'll have the links back to his post to be able to take a look at it. But he did call out a couple of things. I will say, after talking with a bunch of different people on the server team, the product team, that they're equating this level of a revision to the product to be equivalent to back when Server 2000 came out, differences of the previous version from like NT351 to Server 2000. It's that level of monumental change and stuff that's inside of the server product.
Wow.
It's huge.
So a couple of points that Bill mentioned in his blog post has to do with, let's start, kind of hit off some of the key points.
Okay.
Talk a little bit about this whole idea, this concept of the cloud design.
Yeah, so basically Microsoft has gone through, and we've been doing data center hosting and cloud-like activities out of data centers for a very, very long time. I mean, Hotmail now 25-plus years going online, so we've got a little bit of experience working with cloud-based systems. Take that into, obviously, public cloud with Azure and with other things that you're very familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
We've taken these concepts of the best practices and learnings from this cloud environment and baked them into the operating system themselves. Managing for scale, being able to easily manage scales of any sizes, dynamically increase and decrease and that sort of stuff, bring a lot of those capabilities into the product itself in a variety of those technologies. One of them, besides the cloud design piece, is obviously the part that's very near and dear to my heart, which is around the virtualization front.
Sure. And there's been some pretty big changes in Hyper-V, right?
Oh, there's so many big changes in Hyper-V. I actually had a conversation with Jeff Woolsey that you'll be able to see at the end of this, where we could have gone on for hours, and we would still have only scratched the surface with it. But to me, one of the things that's a very big and important thing with Hyper-V, well, there's a huge number of them. Two of the things that stick out for me, one of them is a radical new extensible switch that's built into Hyper-V for networking purposes.
Okay.
We'll talk more about that in detail, but think of it as a isolation perspective of being able to take a company like, let's say, Company Blue and Company Red. For certain reasons, they are not allowed to be on the same hardware, same infrastructure. How does a hosting provider look after having those inside their own environment? Well, basically with this virtualized extensible switch that we now have across all the different systems, you literally just kind of plug and drop them into the networking environment, and then now they are isolated and they're able to be moved around independent of each other or together in the same box and still have isolation. And it ties into physical switching environments as well, because it's extensible, with a variety of different partners to be able to do different things.
So this means basically if I move, you know, my virtual machine set from, you know, one node maybe of a cluster over to another, that virtual networking piece moves with me?
Yeah, think about it. You don't have to readdress all your machines. I mean,
Right. Imagine
if you're trying to move physical to virtual and you're at the 10.1.1.x network and you're now moving into a networking hosting infrastructure yourself or to a provider where it's 192.168.123.something. You just simply pick it up, drag and drop, and off it goes as far as the move goes, as far as the IP addressing is concerned. So fantastic stuff inside that kind of a realm. And that's only, again, just touching the start of that switch. There's so much more you can do with it. Again, covered more in an interview that's coming up on that particular thing, too. There's other thing that I'm very excited about with Hyper-V that I personally like because of a disaster recovery perspective. It's called the Hyper-V Replica. You're able to go in and right-mouse click on a virtual machine and establish a replica on a different environment, on a different area, regardless of where that happens to be, and it starts to rebuild and build that machine and keep it in asynchronous sync with your live host that's up and running. And it just works. And it's there, and it's available all through only having a network connection. doesn't matter where it is. You can move things around all over the place. You don't need to be part of a cluster. You can move machines in, you can move machines out from a live migration perspective. That's in addition to doing the replica. Again, I'm kind of going all over the place because I'm so excited because there's so much changes that's gone on with right. Hyper-V. So don't worry. There will be lots of information coming up on the Windows Server Team blog about all the changes with Hyper-V over the coming weeks and coming months. I'm going to have a bunch of stuff with interviews. As I mentioned, I have one with Jeff Woosley. I have another one with Bob Coombs talking about the virtual switch. They're coming up after this particular episode. And it's because I'm passionate about it, there's going to be a lot more interviews going on with the engineering team about the Hyper-V stack and what's different.
So there's some pretty cool stuff in the management front, which is, again, now see, I know your love for Hyper-V and I love Hyper-V as well, but for me, man, server management was always such a headache.
Yeah.
As an IT guy, a big server hugger guy, right? And I personally am excited around some of this stuff, but I'm going to let you talk about it.
I was going to challenge you to say, which part are you more excited about? The PowerShell improvements or the manageability improvements?
Well, I think they're kind of married, a little bit, right?
Well, first of all, there's one thing, it's back-ended by PowerShell, but the one thing that I found very, very interesting, used to be a big barrier for adoption, for adoption of this particular install mode, was Server Core.
Sure.
Right? Now you have the ability to stand up a box to Server Core, apply the GUI on top of it, make all the management changes you want, and do whatever you wanted to on the box physically or even remotely on that box. And then you can remove the GUI interface completely. So even if
and then I'm back to that server core level.
And then you're back to
the
server core level and patching and everything, where 80 to 70 to 90% of the patches don't even apply because they're not there. It's
wow.
A godsend, absolute godsend. So that's one piece. Again, scratching the surface, you can add and remove the GUI interface to your Server Core installs for a manageability perspective. I mentioned the remote management capabilities. For the very first time, the RSAT tools, remote server administration tools, are SIM-shipped. You can download them as a separate download, install them on a Windows 8 client system, and be able to manage your servers. And you can manage a variety of different servers and functionalities
today,
right now, on the beta. We don't have to wait 90 days plus to be able to get it and have it. You can do it today. So from a management experience, again, bringing the learnings from the cloud, having minimal interfaces on your servers, scale of 5, or 50, or 5,000, whatever you're responsible for your servers, you throw on the RSAT tools, you add in servers into your tool that you want to manage, and then all that management interface now applies to one server, 5 servers, 10 servers, 50 servers, and you can pull them all up sequentially, all at once. Like, can you say, highlight these 5 servers, restart the service, go check the event logs, get perfmon data, all from the server tool and server manager. It's like it's reborn. It's so cool, the stuff you can do with that.
I'm getting jealous of you here, dealing with all the server stuff.
Are you aware of all the changes to PowerShell that's also happened?
2,300.
We're not talking a few here and there.
2,300 PowerShell commandlets.
Yes.
In the box. Freaking impressive.
All the stuff is all in the box. You don't have to buy anything additional. It's beta anyway. You don't pay for it because it's beta. But it's in the box. That's not changing. You don't have to buy a license or get a license for some other management solution. It's in the box. PowerShell, 2,300 commandlets. But the commandlets are one thing. And for all my friends that are PowerShell aficionados, I'm a GUI guy. I'm a server hugger GUI guy. PowerShell-wise,
I like pretty things and clicking.
Yeah. And I learned some new things with PowerShell. there's actually output commands you can do to make it spit it out instead of simply as raw text. You can have it come out in the UI as a GUI. To be able to have the results of, for instance, a table dump will list me all the features. You can have it come out in the UI, interact with it, and then spit what you choose to interact with back into your PowerShell commandlets. That's powerful.
That means even Rick can do PowerShell.
Right. But to make it even more so that Rick can do PowerShell, and even Joey, the ISE, the Integrated Scripting Environment, completely revamped.
One of my favorite tools, actually, and I have to use and leverage PowerShell quite a bit, particularly
on the Azure side,
on the Windows Azure side, absolutely. The ISE changes, man. I saw those, and I was like, oh, this is so great.
It may not be such a big thing for developers because they've had IntelliSense for a long time.
Right.
They have a nice script environment for a long time. The V1 of the integrated script environment was really good. Now, as you're typing, it'll go in and suggest commandlets. It'll go in and drop down lists. It'll go in and suggest switches to put in and drop down stuff. It allows you to pick them from the side, have dynamic filtering for what's in there. great discoverability, great learning capabilities, all built into the ISC and into the PowerShell commandlets as well. Fantastic stuff.
Again, scratching
the
surface.
We haven't even gotten off the first page yet. Oh, are we supposed to be doing news today? Oh, in case you didn't hear,
this is the news.
Server is in beta. That's the news.
I think we've gone into the technical interview portion of the Edge show
today. Okay, that's good.
One thing that I definitely wanted to cover, it's one of the things that when we were at the Build conference really kind of excited me, and I wanted to kind of get your take on it.
Well, I'm envious of you because you were at the Build conference. I wasn't at the Build conference. So go ahead.
I was working.
Talk about it.
I was working. Storage enhancements.
Yes.
There's some pretty killer stuff as it relates to storage, and performance and
storage
file servers and this whole idea of you know, file server transparent failover.
Well, I had a 20-minute conversation with the GM of storage. Again, another interview you guys will be able to see at the end of this one here, talking about the changes to it. And the big thing that he was stressing to me was the fact that they've made storage and high availability accessible to organizations of all sizes. We're talking like 2 servers, 20 servers, 2,000 servers. This all applies for what you can do. So in the past, if you're doing any kind of high availability stuff with servers and with virtualization, it was a very expensive thing. You had a clustering involved, mm-hmm. and you have to have 50% of your cost was all tied up in disk and storage and arrays and networking switches and stuff like that. No more. Like, it's insane, the stuff that they have going on with the level of integration. And it's a cross-team effort. They've had to go through and literally track down all the different timeouts and procedures and weights for all the different pieces of the networking stack, the storage stack, the operating system, for how it accesses the disk, to reduce it now to a failure of workload. So say, for instance, your virtualization workload or your SQL workload, now on your file server transparent failover system, your UNC name of where you store your VHD files, that's what it is. It's down to like a 15-second failover time.
Wow.
Think of Wolfpack, or think of clustering with Windows 2008 R2,
you
which
mentioned
was fantastic.
Wolfpack. I think I broke out in a rash here.
But if you had a load that was on that particular system and it had a node cluster that was failed, it would take minutes or 15 minutes or whatever the time frame happened to be for your hardware setup to be able to realize there was a failure and to spin it up and to restart the system. We're talking less than 15 seconds, or the target is 15 seconds for what that failover is, because of the way they've re-architected the whole thing. So it's disk-based SaaS solutions attached in. You're not tied into using a particular vendor. You're open up to any hardware that's Microsoft compliant or Windows Server compliant, mm-hmm. From a compatibility list perspective. You're not tied into one vendor, and applies to multiple workloads like server, like virtualization and other ones, and also just regular file shares as well. Fantastic stuff.
We've just covered a few of these high-level areas,
we're already starting to
run out of time here. So, a couple of things. There's a couple of go-dos that you kind of mentioned in your interview. You mentioned that you've got some videos with some folks at 4, if I understand it correctly.
Yeah, right? So I talked to Ian Lucas from the engineering team. Basically, I hooked up with Michael Leeworthy, a friend of mine, that basically said, you got to talk to these guys to get your coverage across a broad spectrum, because there's so much stuff you won't be able to cover it all. And I sat down for anywhere from 15 to 25 minutes talking with these people. Ian Lucas on management and PowerShell, fantastic interview, in his office, just chatting back and forth about stuff. Great demo in that particular one there. Jeff Woolsey, I could talk to him for hours. Absolute hours on virtualization. He's talking about scalability improvements with the beta code. It's like phenomenally exponentially larger than what we announced at Build back then for VM sizes, RAM support, virtual CPU support, that sort of stuff. He talks about the GUI, the ability to remove it and add it back in again, which is actually really, really cool, as well as a whole whack of other stuff, specifically on Hyper-V. Bob Coombs was about network virtualization and the extensible switch. Extensible switch. It's not a black box like some other vendors out there. It's extensible. And we've got partnerships with a whole whack of different partners that are building stuff to tie the virtual switch into their hardware solutions and then back out again. It also does filtering, also does forwarding, also does everything except make your coffee. It's in there for that switch.
They may do that. They just haven't added the PowerShell.
And then finally, Thomas Penning was talking about storage management. He fascinating whiteboard discussion around how the storage environment has changed. He's even talked to me about this new concept that we've been partnering with different hardware vendors in, I think it was in the main area, in Asia Pacific area, where they build these things, talking about a single 2U rack system that is actually 2 nodes, but not a cluster, using the file storage technology with a disk and with networking switch, accessible to small, medium businesses to be able to do stuff. It's incredible. So yeah, those interviews are coming up. Links at the bottom of this particular episode and also on the blog for special interviews purposes. But the main place to go to is going to be the blog, which the URL is going to be right there, because I don't know the exact URL, but Bill Lang's blog points out to it. And he also points to the different server team blogs about storage, about PowerShell, about management, and the rest of them as well, because they're all just starting to come out today on the 2nd of March.
And my understanding is we'll also have a first look course on the Microsoft Virtual Academy coming?
Yes, there was a first look course that was recorded by a friend of mine, Dan Rieger.
Okay.
That is going to have some good overview stuff for positioning for where things happen to be. That is at MicrosoftVirtualAcademy.com. And some skill testing questions to see if you're listening, to see how good you go.
If you're paying attention.
Paying attention and being able to get bragging rights for you across the country for where things are.
Awesome. Well, folks, that's it for another exciting special episode.
Oh.
The Windows Server episode of The Edge Show. Now, remember, of course, you at home, we really want you guys to participate. There's an entire comment section just below this video here. Of course, on Twitter, at TNEdge.
I just got the password from Mr. Tessar.
Look out. He's going to be all over Twitter. He's going to be all over
Twitter.
Watch
out, Twitterverse.
Also, upcoming events, MMS 2012.
Yep.
Officially sold out. You're going to want to catch The Edge Show live.
And actually, I'm looking for a room. I've got my reservation for the attendee.
He's going to be staying out in the parking garage.
But I'll be in the parking garage in a car someplace.
And then, so I think that's about covered it for this week.
You got it.
We will catch you next time on The Edge Show.
You got it.
Hey, thanks for joining us, Rick.
See you around. Thank you, Joey. Yeah.